then I got to start with just the general feeling in Tampa Bay about this ball club again after in the shortened season making it to the World Series. Once again, the Yankees have all the payroll, the Red Sox, the Jays are young and exciting and a really good ball club, and it's the Rays with a 6.5 game lead yet again. Mark, how do they do this?
It's all magic and mirrors, there's no doubt. No, they have their own way of doing things, as everybody who watches them play knows. They find a way to put together teams with low budgets. They don't pay players for past performance. They rely heavily on young players. They rely heavily on players that maybe failed elsewhere, and they're able to get, you know, on a favorable contract. I mean, they do spend some money. I mean, Charlie Morton made $15 million a year the previous 2 years. Kevin Kiermaier is making $11 million this year. I mean, they do spend some money, but they have very much a team concept. Kevin Cash is a master at setting a culture in the clubhouse that gets the players to buy in, to put their egos aside. It's easy to say. It sounds cliche, but they do it. They use the whole roster. They use the whole pitching staff. They've got Shane Boz is being activated tonight. He will be the 61st player they've used this year and the 37th pitcher. They have 13 guys with saves. They have 22 guys with wins. I mean, this is a team effort in every sense of that phrase.
And that's so well documented, and those stats are amazing. 61 players, 37 pitchers. Mark, that's the kind of rotation you expect of a fourth-place team, not a first-place team. It's not just that they're rolling out all these. So many of them have been productive. And again, I'm just sounds like I'm waxing poetic on this team, but I got to talk about it before we move on and talk about this series and what happens in the last 2 weeks. Not only do they have the number of players they're bringing into the lineup, it seems like everybody they bring in there is a pretty good ball player.
And that's the part that truly is, you know, as I joked at the open here, the magic. But that's the part where the Rays probably don't get enough credit, is the work that they do in identifying players that can help them and fit in their system. I mean, there's guys, and we could obviously spend much more time on this than we're having in the air today, but Joey Wendell was DFA'd by the Oakland A's at the end of the 2018 season, or 17 season. Yeah, he's been here 4 years now. This guy has been an integral and essential part of all the success they've had. He was on the discard pile. He didn't fit there. He fit here. They know how to use these guys. This goes back to Joe Maddon when he was here, and Andrew Friedman was the general manager, now obviously on with the Dodgers, and Joe with the Angels. But find guys, figure out what they do well, maximize the opportunity to use them and make them good. And Joe used to, you know, we'd ask Joe, why don't you play Ben Wagner more? He's doing really well. And the answer might be maybe Ben's doing really well because he doesn't play all the time. Like, they have a way of finding out what these guys do best and put them in those roles, and that's how they use them.
And it's worked to perfection. 6.5 game lead on the Red Sox, 7.5 up on the Jays heading into the 3-game series, which starts tonight right here, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, Shane Boz gets an opportunity to start. He's the Rays' number one prospect. His major league debut against one of the hottest lineups in baseball in the Blue Jays. Level of confidence they must have in him, Mark. And I know that, again, you know, you do have to use guys in certain situations, but clearly this is going to be an intriguing matchup because he's going against a potential Cy Young winner here.
He is, and I think he's probably more concerned with the two potential MVP winners in the middle of that lineup, along with the local product with the flowing hair that matches no other in the game, and that group of guys that have the bats in their hand, because it's going to be quite a challenge for Shane Boz in his big league debut. And it's easy to say this now, and I'd be happy to come back on tomorrow if he gets lit up tonight and gives up 20 runs, but he seemed very cool, calm, collected, and confident in talking about it yesterday. Looking forward to this opportunity. He might have come up and pitched against the Tigers over the weekend. They were talking about it. And then, of all things, Shane Boz sneezed and had a back spasm on Wednesday. So they scratched him from his Thursday start and then pushed it back, and then decided over the weekend he felt good enough, he threw a bullpen to bring him up. So he kind of put himself in this situation. He joked that he made sure to take his Zyrtec yesterday so he didn't sneeze again. But he's ready to face this lineup. He said he's not intimidated. He feels like he's one of those guys that feels like if he's doing what he does well works, it works against anybody. And he did just pitch in the Olympics, did okay there, had one start, and said that experience in a way may have been more nerve-rattling for him than this will be tonight.
Yeah, that Olympic experience is a big thing. And listen, you can never sell anybody short just because it's a major league debut. Alek Manoah went into Yankee Stadium and did a tremendous job in his debut. So it will be intriguing to see for sure. So the Rays have the 6.5 game lead on the division, and that is a large enough lead to almost anoint them as division champions. Now, we know Rays in 2011 came back on the Boston Red Sox, and the Jays had a huge collapse in 87. I mean, from time to time, it does happen. But maybe just talk about the level of confidence of the Rays of taking care of business here and finishing the division as soon as possible, obviously, to set up the rotation the way they want it for the postseason.
Yeah, and you know, that whole pitching thing for them is going to be interesting in the postseason because they don't really have a set rotation per se, whereas last year they had the big three of Glasnow, Snell, and Morton. They don't have any of those guys, obviously, this year. So that's going to be interesting unto itself. But, look, they haven't had a good September. They're 8-10. They only lost 6 games in August. They've already lost 10 in September, and we're only halfway through the month here or so. And, you know, what looked to be a fairly easy schedule for them in September has not turned out to be. They did not play well. They had 7 games against the Tigers. They only won 3 of those. Obviously, the Jays are the hottest team in baseball. They do have the Marlins this weekend, but then they finish at the Astros, who are still playing for seeding, and at the Yankees, who, you know, whether you want to look at it as good or bad for the Rays, that the Yankees may be playing for their lives next weekend too. So, you know, the Rays might enjoy the chance to knock them out, but also know that they're going to be battling most likely to stay in the wild card picture. So, it's going to be a very interesting couple of weeks for the Rays. I don't think they are in a 69 Cubs category here. I don't think you're going to see a massive collapse. I think they feel good. I mean, you know, Boz is obviously a wild card tonight. Drew Rasmussen has been their most consistent starter since he went into the rotation in mid-August, and he'll go tomorrow night. Michael Wacha has actually been better, and you guys saw him a little bad and a little good the other day in Toronto. So I think it'll be a very competitive series. I mean, I would say if you're the Rays, you just need to make sure you win one game. And, you know, you don't want the Jays to get too much confidence either. And obviously, if they were to sweep, they could sweep to within a handful of games. The Red Sox and Yankees still play each other. So there's a lot of back and forth that still has to happen here over these final 2 weeks.
No doubt. It is going to be fascinating to see how it all shakes down. You already alluded to the Kevin Cash. Let's talk a little bit more about him, Mark, and his imprint on this team. I mean, for many years, it was Joe Madden's clubhouse. And Joe Madden, and, you know, I mentioned off the top when we talked about the Rays, I'll never forget, I had an opportunity to interview him once. And I asked him, you know, straight out, so if there's one thing that, you know, you could say about your organization's ability to compete in the brutally tough American League East against the Yankees and the Red Sox, and back then the Jays were a factor most seasons at any rate, and the division is so tough and your payroll is so low, and what's the one thing maybe that's your focal point? And I'll never forget his answer. He was very charitable. He was very nice about it. He said, well, yeah, here's the one. There's 100 things I talk about, but here's one of them, the first right at the top of the list. I stopped talking about how tough it is. It is what it is. I just ignore it, and I go on, and we do our business right from spring training. It's like, yeah, these guys are all gone, but these are the new guys we have, and we just move on with that. Kevin Cash strikes me, and you already alluded to it, that culture, Mark. The culture being is stop talking about what you don't have and how difficult a road you have and start focusing on what you do have and the weapons you have. To use your example, you said they have used 61 players and 37 pitchers. You go, oh my goodness, there's no continuity. How about the flip side is the depth in the organization that you can continue to roll those guys out. Is Kevin Cash just like, you know, Madden 2?
Yeah, I think he learned a lot from Joe from afar, obviously. They didn't overlap here, but I think, you know, the culture was established. I think Kevin Cash, you know, is a very smart guy. You guys had him up there as a player, obviously. You know, backup catchers are sometimes the smartest guys in baseball because they kind of see and know everything and don't have to play very much.
Yeah, they watch every game from the bench. Yeah.
Right. They soak it in a lot. He still tells some great stories about catching Halliday and stuff like that up there. But I think he knew he understood what the role was here, and part of maintaining what they have. I mean, they did not make the playoffs 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18, and they had a couple of rough years in there. But what they did from 8 to 13 was ingrained in their methodology. The front office changed, the manager changed, some of the coaches changed. Obviously, all the players changed, but the concept remained and the ownership remained, and Stu Sternberg is the owner, and he's hired people that, you know, the continuity, even if the roles change in the front office, is there. So I do think that they knew what they were doing. They maintained that. And Kevin Cash, very similar to what you said about Joe Madden, if you guys had him on, he doesn't talk about the payroll difference. He doesn't care how much money Gerrit Cole makes as the Yankees ace versus if Shane McClanahan were to start with him in a key series and Shane's making the minimum. That's not the kind of stuff he focuses on. He likes to talk about the talent that they have, how good of a team they are, how they use these guys in all these different roles. They use the whole bench. I mean, it's like a National League type play. And I did a piece last week, Brandon Lau, at that point, you know, he's their leader in home runs. He's in the top six in the American League in home runs. He's top six against right-handed pitchers, OPS. He's done markedly better against left-handed pitchers. He didn't play three of the first eight games in September. That's just how they rotate these guys. They try to match them upright. They try to rest them. They have a deep enough bench to do that. And when you're not in the lineup, these guys say, they don't say it's a day off. They just say it's a day to not start.
That's a good way to phrase it when you think about it. Yeah, day not to start. You're bang on. Circumstances may have you in the ball game, and that's a more than semantics. I think that's a great attitude and looking at it that way, Mark. Like your view from afar on the MVP race, because it has been a talking point here in Toronto, of course, Ohtani has had a record season for the ages. And despite the slump with the bat throughout, you know, August and September, I just cannot not vote for him as MVP. But of course, Vladdy, Marcus have had tremendous seasons as well here. But your thought on that, because, you know, it's the kind of opposite. We talk about Tampa Bay and all the players they've used, and it's all about the team. It's not about the individual stars. Here now we're talking about individual stars for the MVP and even for the Cy Young. And you talked about Cole versus Ray. Their numbers are close. Ray, with a big start tonight against the Rays, might become the definitive favorite. And I know the Rays wouldn't bring it up, but it's $36 million versus $15 million, too. That's pretty significant as well, Mark. But what's your thought on both the Cy Young and the MVP?
And it'll be $15 million against $570,500 tonight.
There you go.
Same Bob. So like, you can look at it that way, too, and put it in that kind of I mean, you certainly, Vlad Guerrero, and don't, like I said before, like, Marcus Simeon, like, what a great year. He's best chance in the world is to finish third. Like, he has an MVP year going in a lot of other seasons, and his best chance is to finish third this year. But they've got two horses in Guerrero and Simeon, no doubt about it. But you've got a unicorn in Shohei Ohtani. So I don't know that you can vote for either one of the horses over the unicorn, to put it in some weird analogy that popped into my head as we were talking about this. But what Shohei Ohtani has done, I mean, you could argue it's never been done before in baseball history. And if you even want to try to find close, you got to go back to Babe Ruth, and I'm not even sure he did it. So it's hard to go against that. Now, if the Jays make the playoffs, will that sway some thought? I do think it will. If Vlad wins the Triple Crown in the American League, I do think it will. If Vlad wins the Triple Crown in all of Major League Baseball, I do think it will. So I think it could be close, but I still think Shohei Ohtani is going to be the winner.
I would agree with you. And how about pitching-wise, Ray against Cole?
Well, I'll tell you this. If you only took Robbie Ray's games against the Tampa Bay Rays, he is the unanimous Cy Young Award winner by far, because he has just been electric against these guys, and I think we've seen him four or five times now, and I assume he'll be really good again tonight. I mean, Gerrit Cole is going to have the reputation. I know obviously I'm a BBWA member, chapter chairman. I mean, the voting is set up to make sure there is no bias. Each American League city has two votes for each of the major awards. But you do have that kind of East Coast, New York bias perception, the attention, the publicity. I mean, Gerrit Cole's really good. Everyone knows that. So there's going to be people who look at his stats and say, oh, he was really good. And you vote for him. But this is one of those, you know, go inside the numbers kind of thing. And yet, you know, you can look at Robbie Ray's numbers against certain contending teams. He isn't as good as he is against non-contending teams. So there's different ways to break some of these stats down. But I think Robbie Ray has put himself into the debate, whether he's one or two is going to come down to maybe how these guys finish. And even though Cy Young isn't a team-oriented award as much as MVP, if, you know, one or either guy pitches their team into the playoffs with a huge couple games down the stretch, could also factor in that.
And that's indeed the case, and that's why these final games and final 2 weeks of the season are so important. One more before we let you go, Mark. I got to ask about the ultimate future of the franchise in Tampa Bay. It's been pretty quiet from afar. It's always been a discussion of ballpark and the attendance and where things are going. And I know a couple of years ago, I was born in Montreal, and they were all excited because, oh, the Rays are going to play part of their season there. But what is the update? And you know, it's unfortunate, you know, that it even is still a topic of discussion, but it does remain a topic of discussion. What do you think the ultimate future is? Are they going to get a ballpark built there?
I mean, it's definitely a major topic of concern. I mean, it's not a topic of discussion right now because the team is doing so well. And, you know, I think obviously the team ownership realized it's not the right time to talk about these things. But I can tell you that, you know, at some point during this season, I talked with team officials, with the owner, and they still say not only is the Montreal plan their top choice, it's their only focus at this point. You know, they still think they can make that work. It would obviously be tremendous for them financially, and it would be incredibly challenging logistically for everybody involved. I mean, players, staff, MLB, other teams, families. I mean, you can just draw a list, go on and on and on. But in a way, what the Blue Jays have done the last couple of years was kind of an indication of that, even though under totally different circumstances, of having to play in different cities and move people around and move equipment and move staging areas and all that type of stuff. So it was a little bit of a snapshot, and we know that, you know, what the players went through, and give tons of credit to Charlie Montoyo for keeping those guys focused, playing in three different cities this year and having three different homes. So the Rays have a lease through 2027 at Tropicana Field. Realistically, it takes 3 to 4 years to build a stadium. So at the end of next season, going into the spring of 2023, there kind of has to be some decision, because they've got to have a place to play on April 1st, 2028. Now, could they kick the can down the road and get an extension at Tropicana Field where they're still trying to work something out? I'm sure that's possible, but there's a massive redevelopment going on of downtown St. Pete. They want to build on that land, whether it does or doesn't include a ballpark. There's plans both ways. Trying to get two stadiums built, one in Tampa or St. Pete and the other in Montreal, seems pretty challenging. Especially, you know, given what municipalities and governments are dealt with post-pandemic, or still pandemic, I should say, and post-pandemic and revenues and things like that. Who's going to build a ballpark, much less two? Is that possible? Is there still hope down here, people in the communities that think either Tampa or St. Pete will somehow find a way to build a full-time ballpark and secure the future of this franchise for a long time? Yes, there is that hope, but there's nothing concrete. There's no plans. There's no groups. There's no ticket drive. There's no petition drive. There's no website. None of that is happening. And you know, the longer it goes, you just wonder if it ever would happen.